RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the August 14th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and come here on this edition of the podcast presented by Roman. We are going to preview Saturday's UFC 241, a great fight card that the UFC has in store for us. So myself and Daniel will give our thoughts on the fight cards. Also, we're going to take a look back at what happened last weekend at UFC Uruguay, talk about Valentina Shevchenko, what could be next for her. Also, talk about some news and notes, talk about the UFC announcing some main event fights for some upcoming cards. Plus, going to have three interviews for you. Hear my conversation with Bellator 225 fighters, David Rickles and Tyrell Fortune. Also, you'll hear my conversation with Carmen Carbajal, who should be fighting here, coming up here in a couple of weeks at Valor FC 63. Of course, last week on the show, I was rolling solo. This week, Daniel back on the show, back from El Paso, working for his television station. So, Daniel, man, how you doing, man? How was that 11-hour drive for you?
Yeah, man, it was definitely quite the experience, and usually no matter what, I try and make it work. You know, we only need a sliver out, a subsection of the day, no matter what time it is, whether it be 2 a.m. or 7 a.m. or 6 p.m., whatever time we need to record, we need to make it happen. But, you know, things went haywire if we didn't record together. And, yeah, absolutely. El Paso was quite the experience, man, from where I am to where it is. It was an 11-hour drive. And, you know, as soon as you go to a situation – like that, and a situation that's really insane. It's just insane to drive to where an event like a mass shooting occurred, especially in your home state that you are just so prideful and connected to, and especially because, not to get too into the weeds with it, but when you read about like the shooter's manifesto or whatever, what he was looking for, that El Paso community was like identical to my community that I come from, which is a border town. So that is so scary. And obviously, it's just been a surreal couple of weeks, both home and away. It was surreal to go to this place. A lot of times we spend all our lives only watching areas that were affected by mass shootings on television. But when you go, it's very surreal. And it was just nonstop work. I did all kinds of things. A lot of time spent at vigils, a lot of time interviewing people. Saw President Trump, saw one of the guys running for the Democratic presidential seat, Beto O'Rourke. He kind of came across like this heart and soul of El Paso. The coolest part of going to El Paso was seeing the community rally together, man. Like, there were so many people at night at this Walmart vigil. It was insane. There was music, there was bagpipes, there was all kinds of cool stuff. So, like, the one really amazing thing was to see the community come together. And I kind of fell in love with the city of El Paso. Like, it looks beautiful. It's a mountainous area. And also, I tell you what, the only downtime I had there was to eat food, and you got to prioritize that, I think. And I will say El Paso has unbelievable Mexican food, but all in all, man, a very emotional experience. It's something you don't want to do, but in this field, you feel pride that you were sent out there to do it, and you try your best to capture it. And fortunately, I had plenty of time to listen back to the podcast on an 11, 13, 12-hour drive. So I appreciate it, Jason. But yeah, it was quite the week, and now we are kind of back to reality.
Yeah, like, I realize how big the state of Texas is, but when you text me like, yeah, it's an 11-hour drive from the Rio Grande El Paso, I'm like, good Lord. I'm not a car guy like that. No.
Yeah, no one is. No one is. You are not supposed to be in a car for that amount of time, especially me, bro. Like real talk, I got issues, man. I got bladder issues. I don't know what's going on with my bladder, Jason. I always gotta pee, man. Every time I wake up, it's just boosh. You know, every time I try and go to sleep, it's at least 7 trips to the restroom before I'm officially in sleep. And so I'm driving with somebody, so I don't want to be that guy who stops every 30 minutes because he's got to let a little tinkle out. So I told myself, all right, I'm only going to stop every hour and a half. And I'm just looking at the clock, literally counting down the seconds because I got to go, man. And yeah, that was the hardest part of the drive up because I had to pee so bad constantly. And yeah, that is an underrated thing. But yeah, man, it was the drive itself was hard. It really was. And it's just something that I guess it's a different world, man, because that's the world I know, especially living in the most southern part of Texas. The idea of driving across state lines is like a 24-hour thing for me, whereas I think for other people it's not. But for me, it's like, yeah, you don't hit another state for nearly a day.
Yeah, that's absolutely nuts. But, you know, of course, last week on the show, you know, talked about various things. Chris Cyborg talked about King of the Cage blocking another fighter from potentially, you know, signing with a bigger promotion. In that case, it was Anthony Romero as King of the Cage blocked his fight for the Contender Series, which is awful to hear. But this week, big fight week, Daniel, UFC 241, and top to bottom, Just a great fight card lineup. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, look, I think I wouldn't blame anybody if they say, you know what, I'm going to pass on the early prelims. I wouldn't blame you if you said that. But when you look at those TV prelims all the way up to the main card on pay-per-view, this is just a phenomenal lineup that the UFC has put together.
Without question, Jason, every week we have a different type of UFC meal. Some weeks there are cards where you can tell we're gritting through our teeth doing the preview, and we're not. Like, we are literally dreading watching the card because we know we're probably going to waste our time, our Saturday. But some weeks we have the filet mignon, the medium rare, well-priced steak with a nice helping of mashed potatoes and corn, and you want to dig into all of it. This card is awesome. It's top heavy with the great main event, maybe the last fight in Daniel Cormier's career, defending his title against Stipe Miocic. An awesome two-punch combination with Pettis versus Diaz and Costa versus Romero. And then it's not only top heavy, but as you mentioned, there are several fights on this preliminary card that I am very much looking forward to. That look very interesting. A fight like Rafael Assunção, Corey Sandhagen, not even the main event of the prelims on ESPN, and that is an awesome fight. Close and Jagos, great fight. So, again, it is peaks and valleys when it comes to the previews for these UFC events because they happen every single week. They can't always be great, beautiful peaks, but UFC 241, Jason, it's one of those events where everyone who's an MMA fan is going to stay tuned, and I am hyped for this old card.
Yeah, that's what, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, when it's a premium product, all we can ask for is that it's a true premium product and you have no concerns with forking over, you know, $60 to watch this pay-per-view. And I'm looking forward to whether I'm sitting on my couch on Saturday night or I'm at a buddy's house watching these fights. I'm just looking forward to watching these fights. I mean, you know, obviously you look at those top three fights. Those are ultimately the reason that you're truly coming to the pay-per-view. But yeah, I think those other two fights on the pay-per-view, I do look at one side of the fight and say, there's one side of the fight that kind of has me interested, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on here as we preview UFC 241. But let's, you know, kick off with that main event, the rematch, Daniel Cormier defending the heavyweight title against Stipe Miocic. And you kind of know this just a second ago, and it's really one how we kind of want to start this preview is about Daniel Cormier and the future and whether or not Saturday night could be the final fight for Daniel Cormier, win or loss. And I can go either way on this one, Daniel. I sit there and say, as a fight consumer, a fight fan, if he wins on Saturday night, I hope it's not the final fight of his career because I do want to see the trilogy match between Daniel Cormier and Jon Jones. But when I see there was a comment on MMAfighting.com about Daniel Cormier and retirement where he said this, quote, "I don't want to be a guy that goes out on my back. A lot of our greatest champions, they leave the sport on their back. They leave as former champions. They leave their fans with that last vision of their favorite fighter on their back, then standing in the middle of the octagon while their belt is getting strapped on someone else. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be a guy that I want to be a guy that goes out on my own terms. And that was Daniel Cormier talking to Damon Martin of MMAfighting.com. When I read that quote, to me, that tells me I think that it's more likely that Saturday night is a final fight. But then I look at it and say, Daniel Cormier, the competitor, you know, no matter what he says publicly, you got to know deep down inside he wants that trilogy match against John Jones.
Especially not only Daniel Cormier, the competitor, Daniel Cormier, the human being who owns a bank account, also wants that fight. I mean, think about when it became clear that there was going to be an endpoint for Daniel Cormier. He set it in stone. And think about the path to that endpoint that we projected. DC's going to run to the bank with just money coming everywhere. He's going to fight Brock Lesnar. He's going to fight John Jones. He's going to break pay-per-view records, and he's going to be richer than ever, and he's going to retire on a golden jet ski. Yet here we are, nearing the end, and he's fought Derek Lewis and Stipe Miocic. It has not been the high draw fight after fight that we expected in this golden hour for Daniel Cormier. In fact, it has been the exact opposite. Fights that were interesting, but fights that were not career defining that we thought Cormier was going to get an opportunity to have. The Brock Lesnar fight was important because as Cormier kind of nears the end, and he is in his prime at age 40, which is quite the accomplishment. But as Cormier nears the end, a fight like Brock Lesnar would have been beautiful because the thing is, Brock isn't very good, but he's got a big name value. So he could have ran through him, and then he could have just left it all out on the line in a fight against John Jones where it's more likely than not he loses, although you do watch the most recent John Jones performance against Thiago Santos, and then you start feeling pretty confident about Daniel Cormier's chances against John Jones. I will say that much. So with that being said, man, it really does seem like Daniel's head is in retirement. Yeah, because the thing is, we do talk about money, but this is one guy where you are not concerned about his ability to make a penny once his MMA career is over. This guy's got options. This guy theoretically could run the UFC one day. He could be a commentator for literally any sport. I'm sure the ping pong community would love to put him on the broadcast booth, but he's probably going to be an MMA commentator. But there's been talks of pro wrestling wanting him for the WWE Fox deal. He could do so many things. He very much reminds me of Brian Stan, that you just by stalking him as a human. So my head tells me Daniel Cormier is going to retire, but my gut instinct tells me Daniel Cormier still is going to get in that cage with John Jones. That is what my gut instinct tells me, Jason. And I just like watching MMA time and again, I just continue to go with my gut instinct. My gut instinct has been wrong. My gut instinct told me that GSP and Conor were going to fight. That fight never happened. But my gut instinct tells me that. And then one other thing is like, Daniel Cormier is talking about how he doesn't want to go out on his back, whatever. Here's the problem, Jason. This ain't professional wrestling. He's probably going to go out on his back because he's fighting someone who's really, really tough in Stipe Miocic. And he may not get the opportunity to not go out on his back because he's going up against one of the toughest heavyweights in the world. And I guarantee you Stipe is going to be motivated to absolutely ruin the end for Daniel Cormier.
You know, I think the problem is when you go back and you look at your first fight and you say, what makes you say this is going to be different? Because the thing that Cormier did in that first fight is he made Stipe fight his fight. And so, and look, and Stipe understands what he has to do different. But if we rewind back to 14 months ago, we would have sat here and said Stipe Miocic is the greatest UFC heavyweight champion of all time just based on the amount of title defenses that he had. But if Daniel Cormier wins on Saturday night, he probably takes that title from him as well.
Man, yeah, I think he does too. I think if he wins, you just can't. There are very few people, not only like in the division, but just pound for pound, I would put ahead of Daniel Cormier. Realistically, like, let's say Cormier wins, Jason. We're doing the pound for pound rankings. How high would you put the man? Because the problem is, like, like obviously John Jones is high, but you kind of just disqualify John Jones.
You have to. And I saw someone tweeted the current UFC pound for pound rankings out there. And right now, one is DC, two Jones, three Nurmagomedov, four Henry Cejudo. Cejudo should be number two. Mm-hmm. He's got a belt in two weight classes. How do you, mm-hmm. you know, Amanda Nunes, how do you not have them at right there above Jones and Nurmagomedov? Because they do have belts in two different weight classes.
I almost think Nunes should be one. Like if we're just comparing like dominance in their division and in multiple divisions, like if we say every division's equal, which actually maybe isn't fair, that's actually a bad idea. But man, Nunes and Cejudo for sure, because they're multi-divisional champions. Nunes has been way more dominant, like for a longer time than anyone else. Man, that's a tough one. But yeah, I don't know how you put Khabib and old John Jones in there. I mean, shoot. It's questionable, but I mean, So there's a lot of fight.
It's like I saw this tweet from TMZ where, you know, DC said that because of Jones's drug test issues, that he kind of disqualifies himself as being known as the greatest of all time. And I can't disagree with what he says there.
Mm-hmm. I agree, man. You don't, when you had this conversation, you don't want to have the conversation about drugs. He just disqualified the guy because you don't know how much that impacted his performance. You just don't. Like when we talk best baseball player of all time, Barry Bonds, I guess, comes up, but not really.
He disqualified himself.
Yeah, he disqualified himself. Like, sure, I think he should go in the Hall of Fame, honestly. But when you talk best baseball player of all time, I mean, you're going to talk Mike Trout.
Yeah.
You know, Barry Bonds, who probably was the best baseball player of all time, disqualified himself because it's just too confusing, man. Figuring out who's the best of all time is confusing enough, but when you add in the steroids and the possible cheating, and we got to do our mental math on like how much impact that had, we're just going to say, you know what, screw you, we're not going to think about you anymore. Like, that's just easier on our brains. So sorry, John Jones, but you disqualified yourself. Like, he's going to have to go on a 10-year run or something, as good as he is. But again, just to get back to something here, if I'm Cormier, I want to get in the cage with John Jones, because John Jones did not look good in that last fight. Like, he looked very – like, Thiago Santos had, like, a torn ACL, PCL – like, pick three random letters in the alphabet. Thiago Santos had that ligament torn, and he nearly beat John Jones.
And to me, that says a lot about the power that Thiago Santos has and how he affected the way Jones fought him. But, yeah, you're spot on. Like, if you're DC and you look at that fight, you're sitting there going now, look, I think the other question is, because the whole narrative you hear is that if this fight ever does happen, that DC wants it to be at 205. So does DC want to cut? I mean, DC's probably – I bet he's probably going to weigh somewhere in the 240 to 250 range.
Dude, he's halfway to 80. I mean, don't mean to bring that up, DC, but you're 40 years old, yeah. Buddy. You born in 1979. The last time,
I'd be better off. They just said, "All right, let's meet halfway. We're gonna call this a contracted weight of 225 pounds."
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Or maybe even 230.
Yeah. You could. I would go a little lower.
I think. I don't know if I want to see DC trying to cut down to 205 pounds at 40 years old.
Just a bad idea. I think it would take away from the fight. I really do. And I don't want to take away from the fight.
So later on in the show, people are going to hear my conversation with David Rickles. And this actually, weight cutting comes up in the conversation. And one of the things that he talked about was now being at 170 as opposed to 155, he feels like he can take a shot better than what he did because of, you know, the weight cut. And you look at DC, I mean, the guy's doing all these interviews during fight week. He's not worried about his weight. And the other thing about DC is he's the type of fighter the UFC wants. He's an ambassador to the sport, because you don't got to worry about him doing anything stupid.
Yeah. They should just reward. They should give you a bonus if you don't do anything stupid.
They don't. Dana White does not have to worry about getting a call at 4 o'clock in the morning saying Daniel Cormier has been arrested. He doesn't got to worry about that. He's got to worry about that with John Jones on a daily basis.
And not just Jones, but a whole hell of a lot of the fighters, you know, he does. And that is not a position I would envy.
Like, when it comes to, like, who I think is going to win, like, when I look at those top three fights on Saturday, you could give me either side of the fight. I'm like, okay. I don't have a strong feeling on who's going to win in those top three fights. I really don't.
That's a great way to label it. That's a great way to frame it. And honestly, these are the best fight cards. When you have three fights that everyone cares about and three fights that you can't predict, like, that's the best of both worlds, man. Mm-hmm. It really is. And again, Diaz, Pettis, Miocic, Cormier, Costa, Romero, I am so down and excited for all three of these fights. When we talk about gut instincts, my gut instinct is that Stipe wins this fight. My pick here is that Stipe does beat Daniel Cormier. For one, I absolutely love picking guys coming off losses, especially after they've had a dominant run. If they've had a dominant run and they got their title taken away from them, their whole world crushed down, it's like the Rocky effect. You know, they're ready to make the comeback. And Stipe's had the opportunity of just making the comeback against the guy who knocked him on his butt. So for Stipe, I think you got to focus on the stand-up, even though that's how you lost the first fight. And you got to hope that the speed is there for you. It may not be, but as Cormier creeps the end of his career, my pick is that Stipe returns to form and gets his title back.
See, my gut says Cormier. My gut says Cormier wins. And then he cuts a promo on John Jones with Joe Rogan.
That, to me, would be the ideal circumstance.
Now, here's the question. And is John Jones going to be in Anaheim on Saturday night? If he is sitting front row, that, to me, tells me we've already got something brewing.
The thing is, like, if Cormier loses, you can still run that fight, in my opinion.
Oh, totally, yes. It is the biggest fight the UFC can truly make right now.
And it has nothing to do with the win or loss. It has nothing to do with being the best in the world. It has everything to do with the hate between these two guys that we've seen over the years.
And having the ESPN PR machine, I think that ESPN could take that fight to another level in terms of getting the casual sports fan interested in that fight.
Like, over the next 12 months, there are only two fights that I see that are going to supercharge UFC. It's going to be that fight. It's going to be whoever Conor fights next. Those are the two blockbuster fights that could be the sea that rises the tide of the UFC.
I can't even think what a third fight would be.
I can't either.
I think that Covington's going to say a lot of crazy stuff leading up to a potential fight against Usman, but I don't think that moves the needle anywhere near the way Jones, Cormier, or Conor versus whoever standing across from him.
Yeah, like, okay, just to play an exercise. Obviously, we can't think of one, but if you had to pick one, who's like the third, like, who would it be? Like, I almost feel like my pick would be Henry Cejudo involved in some situation. Like, when you start to look at, like, who's the number three guy between those light heavyweights and Conor, you know, in that light heavyweight mix, I think Henry Cejudo, honest to goodness.
If I was going to go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Nunez Shevchenko.
Yeah, that's a big fight, but I just don't think that But yeah, that's a good one.
But there's not like a clear, like, okay, that would be the fight that would bring so much attention to this sport. I mean, maybe if you can somehow build up something with Max Holloway, I don't see him against Volkanovski being this huge, you know, people getting truly excited. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, there's not like something else that sticks out to you. I mean, look, Covington is going to say some crazy stuff. We've seen it over the last 2 weeks. And the thing that I find funny about, like, and everyone's getting all in up arms about this whole he's banned from going on SiriusXM because of the interview with Misha Tate. I'm like, Stop it, folks. The reason you're bringing Colby Covington on your show, whether we're talking about a satellite radio show, a terrestrial radio show, a podcast, a video, is because you're hoping he's going to say something like that to get attention on your product. Like, let's not kid ourselves of what that is.
Yeah, man. So much of the radio is monotonous. You can do something that can bump the ratings.
Yeah, like if Colby Covington came on this podcast, am I hoping that he's going to say something that's going to get a lot of people to download the podcast? Of course I am. That's just real talk.
That's the currency we deal in this industry.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, this is the end of the day, you know. It's about getting downloads. That's what this business is about. It's about getting people to view your content. And so when people book Colby Covington on their show, there's a reason they're thinking he's going to say something that is going to get picked up by every MMA website.
Exactly.
And yeah. Sirius got what they wanted. They got everyone to pick up. Because here's the thing. I really wonder, before a week ago, how many people knew Misha Tate had a SiriusXM show?
I'm sure a good
number of the hardcore MMA fan base knew that. But if you're not like in tune, you know, every day on the MMA beat, I don't know if people knew she had a SiriusXM show.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely great advertising.
Yeah. Mission accomplished.
Yeah. We got to get Colby Covington on the show.
Yeah. It's. Sometimes I'm amazed by some of the stuff he says, but yeah, I mean, the UFC's got to go Covington Usman. That fight definitely has to happen, but yeah, I'm going to go Cormier. In the co-main event, I think, you know, the brain totally tells you Anthony Pettis, but my gut says that Nate Diaz is going to throw a couple of middle fingers. He's going to stalk and slap him, and he's going to get Anthony Pettis out of his game plan.
Oh, I could see that totally, man. When Nate Diaz gets in the cage, things go haywire. Like, this guy makes fights interesting. He's such a technically sound guy, and he's very comfortable with the tools that he has, that when he does deviate from your stereotypical mixed martial arts fight and he throws the middle fingers, he changes his movement, he still has the tactics to employ to make it a rough night for his opponent. And I can absolutely see that, man. This fight's all over the place. I think we are just absolutely picking opposite corners this whole show, because I am still taking Anthony Pettis. For Nate Diaz, my biggest concern is having not fought since 2016. Mm-hmm. Priorities in terms of where his head is at in the sport. He's been competing at a high level for a very long time, and I'm just concerned that maybe he doesn't have his hand in the pulse of MMA the way maybe someone like Anthony Pettis is, who just looked unbelievable by knocking out Stephen Thompson in his return to the welterweight division. So I'm selecting Anthony Pettis, but I could definitely see you going for Nate Diaz, to picking him in this fight. Just, again, a tremendous fight that I can't wait to watch.
Look, I think YouTube views tell you a lot about someone's popularity. And to me, there's no question. Nate Diaz is the most popular fighter fighting on Saturday night. So the countdown show, they have it in two parts. One part is for the main event, Cormier Miocic. The other part is for Pettis Diaz. If I told you Pettis Diaz countdown has 1 million more views than Cormier Miocic, would you buy or sell that?
Dang. I guess I gotta buy it, but does it really?
Cormier Miocic, as of Wednesday morning here, mm-hmm. 547,000 views. Mm-hmm. Pettis Diaz, 1.5 million.
That's insane. I believe it, because, like, Miocic isn't that interesting, and neither is Cormier. Like, Cormier needs Jones. But damn.
Cormier and Jones both knew each other. But like, I sat there, I watched the 40-minute interview Brett Okamoto have with Nate Diaz, and it's just, in a way, it's fascinating just to sit there and listen to Nate Diaz. I mean, this is a guy that he is clearly, you know, you look at the biggest stars in the UFC. If you say Conor's one, Nate Diaz right now is probably number two.
Yeah, man, that Diaz name. I mean, Diaz brothers are just some of the most interesting cats in the sports history.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. So they've got a YouTube video of Nate Diaz's top five finishes. 837,000 views.
That's nuts. That's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think, and it says a lot about the popularity of Nate Diaz. I mean, I just, you know, I think from a, I mean, look, I think Anthony Pettis has a better overall skill set than Nate Diaz. You know, I think one of the things when you watch the Diaz brothers fight, what can be frustrating is these guys are so good on the ground, but it's like they just don't want to go there. They just want to have a boxing fight. And to me, that's where if Anthony Pettis can, you know, mix his overall game and not get sucked into what Nate Diaz does, I think he should win this fight. I think this has got 15-minute decision written all over it from both sides of the equation. I would be somewhat surprised if the winner wins this fight by finish. But to me, is if Nate Diaz can get in his head, I mean, and the fight that I kind of, this fight kind of reminds me of is a little bit of when Nate fought Donald Cerrone years ago, where you would say Donald Cerrone is the better overall fighter in terms of his overall skill set, but Nate drew him into what he wants to do, and Nate just beat him up for 15 minutes. You know, I don't blame you for picking Nate Diaz. You know, it makes you wonder if throughout this training camp, if like Sergio Pettis has been like going up to his brother, smacking him and just giving the middle finger like every day, just to see if he can get him out of his game.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, it's an emotional battle, bro, because it's going to get you angry.
You think he like smacks him and just yells Stockton?
Yeah, Stockton, you know. Yeah, he gives him the area code. Yeah, I see that for sure, bro. Like, and the other thing is, man, like, the reach isn't huge, but it's still like 3.5-inch advantage for Diaz. So he's going to be able to utilize that length to do that smacking. And it's going to be a closely contested fight. For sure, I just think we're going to see a higher degree of accuracy with significant strikes for Pettis. I think the volume is going to be there for Diaz. I think it's going to be back and forth. I wouldn't anticipate a lot of grappling. I just don't know. I just feel like it's going to be a stand-up affair. And I think we're going to see a lot of movement inside and outside the range of Diaz. But again, as we make these prognostications for these top three fights, the conceit is anything can happen because these are close fights with a lot of unknown variables.
Yeah, give me Pettis. I think he takes decision. You're going Diaz?
I'm going Pettis.
Oh, you're going Pettis? Yeah, I'm going to go Pettis too. I think the overall skill set.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I guess we're agreeing. We're agreeing here. Let's see if we disagree on the next one.
All right, Romero and Costa. I was listening to Co-Main Event podcast, and they had a great line. They said, both these guys, it's like they are the coming off the bus champion, the way they look. And to me, it's like, if you tell me this fight ends in 5 minutes, picking Paulo Costa. If this fight hits the second round, give me Yoel Romero. And I think the reason that, and I've seen a lot of people kind of, it seems like people are jumping on the Paulo Costa train here, is I think it's more about going against the age of Yoel Romero. But I keep going back and forth on Daniel, and give me Romero. But man, I wouldn't be shocked if Costa wins this fight in the opening 5 minutes.
Oh yeah, dude, this fight is awesome. Like, I would be down just to watch these two guys do the old boxing video game where you hit the boxing thing and you see who hits harder. Like, that would be captivating enough. These two guys look great. They hit hard. They're absolute monsters. It's clear that Yoel Romero is more battle-tested. Obviously, we've seen him compete at a higher level for a much longer time, beat up tougher guys than Costa is, as Costa is trying to make his first ascent to the top of the middleweight division. The smart pick, I think, is Romero, but I have a feeling that Paulo Costa is going to get the win here. It seems like a breakthrough performance opportunity. Again, Romero is an older fighter who has not showcased his age. At some point, that does come into play. I think it's going to be a rock'em sock'em battle, and I think Paulo Costa gets a freak win here and takes out Romero.
But I mean, look, this is, you know, we always talk about that old school Joe Silva matchmaking, old guy against that young prospect, a huge opportunity here for Paulo Costa. Now, you know, we mentioned about the other two fights that I mentioned early on about, you know, there's definitely one side of the fight that you're looking forward to. And, you know, you brought this up, this question, when we were kind of going over things to talk about, of which fighter we expect to improve his stock the most. And to me, it's kind of a 1A, 1B in terms of that question, Daniel. And the two guys that stick out to me are two of the guys in the first two fights of the pay-per-view on Saturday, and that's Sadiq Youssef and Ian Heinisch. To me, these are both potential showcase opportunities for both these guys and maybe the guys that we're most interested in heading forward.
Absolutely, I could see that for sure. They could have breakout performances, especially then that Heinisch Brunson fight is going to be kind of exciting, I think, in the first round for sure. There's a lot of people here you could make that pick for. You could make that pick for Paulo Costa, honestly, if he beats Romero. Devontae Smith is in a showcase fight opportunity against Conor Worthy. Like, yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean,
he's now on his third opponent. So he was supposed to fight McDeath. So when I talked to him, I want to say it was last Monday. So that was like right after McDessie was pulled from the fight, which we really haven't heard exactly why McDessie's out of this fight. Because he even asked me, he goes, hey, do you know? I'm like, no, I don't know. And then it was on to Clay Collard. Clay Collard pulled from this fight, unknown reasons at this time. And now Kama Worthy steps up, taking this fight on, 4 or 5 days notice. I mean, this is definitely a showcase fight for Devontae Smith. And, Devontae is a guy that you have to be very interested in. I mean, I think that, Saturday night, it gets him a paycheck, but does it boost him in those 155 pound rankings? No.
No, it doesn't. But the one guy, it doesn't, because the thing is, he's not being a quality opponent. But the one guy who I think could boost himself the most because he's got a quality opponent in front of him is Corey Sandhagen.
God, I love that fight.
The ninth ranked bantamweight going up against the third ranked bantamweight. It's absolutely a case of Joe Silva matchmaking. But again, Sun Tzu literally only loses to the elite of the elite in his weight class. This is a tremendous fight. And it's a fight in which Corey Sandhagen, if he does win, he's a slight favorite. You're talking about immediate contender at 135 pounds.
That by far is my favorite prelim fight.
Yeah, because you got a top 10 fight. Those are top 10 guys going head to head.
Now, my number two fight in the prelims is Manny Bermudez versus Casey Kenney.
What gets you hyped about that one?
Just two prospects. I mean, look, and when I had Casey on the show last week, I mean, look, Manny is tremendous with the grappling. But Casey basically made it kind of, without saying it, hey, I'm not exactly impressed with everything else he does. But, he even noted, he goes, look, there is a part of me that does want to go in there, and I want to submit him. I want to beat him at his own game. I mean, to me, by far, those are the top two prelims. Sandhagen and Sun Tzu, clearly the best. I mean, it's a great test of where Corey Sandhagen is. And Rafael Sun Tzu may just win that fight. Dracar Close, Christos Yagos, that's kind of a little bit of an interesting fight. Dracar Close recently left the MMA lab. He's now at Fight Ready. So you've had a couple of fighters leave the MMA lab over the last, I would say, month or so. Because the striking coach at the MMA lab was Eddie Cha. Eddie Cha left. He went to Fight Ready. And so several fighters have followed Eddie Cha over to Fight Ready. Dracar Close being one of them. Bobby Moffitt has as well. And I know I'm not sure if Henry Krause has left the MMA lab or not, but I do know he is training at Fight Ready with Eddie Cha. Eddie Cha has been his longtime coach. So it's kind of interesting to kind of see what kind of differences do we see in Dracar Close. And my biggest takeaway from Dracar's appearance last week on the podcast is when I asked about, I think my question was related to how does Eddie Cha make you a better fighter? And one of the things he said, he lets me be me. He says, I have a lot of respect for John Crouch, the head coach of the MMA lab. He goes, but I just felt I couldn't be myself, which I thought was a very interesting comment.
Absolutely, because that makes you think, what was the other camp trying to do to him?
Is that like you sit there and say, are you talking about that as a fighter, as a person? Like, I don't know, but I just thought it was a very interesting comment.
Yeah, it calls into question everything prior, and it calls into question maybe their philosophy or their culture. But that's a one hell of a comment, and the reward of feeling in control and feeling like yourself in life is just it's something where it just seems like things are going your way because you're in control.
Yeah, but,
so.
But I mean, I think overall, just when you look at those top nine fights in this card, I mean, it's just, it's a premium product. And I can't wait to watch these fights on Saturday.
Me too, man. I can't wait to watch them, and I can't wait to talk about them next week.
And so we'll look forward to seeing those fights come up here this weekend. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Daniel Cormier. Let's leave on this note. We'll talk about UFC 241. More likely to be in the octagon on Saturday at some point. John Jones, Conor McGregor, or Brock Lesnar?
That is a good one. Damn, I think it's going to be Brock Lesnar.
What if Brock and Jones both walked in together?
It's a triple threat. It's a triple threat. You know, you can do Brock versus Stipe and Jones and Cormier, you know. There's your third fight there, man. Brock versus Stipe.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if we see Jones or Connors in attendance on Saturday, we're going to know something's up. Because, like, definitely, you do kind of feel like the what's on the line in the co-main event is a Conor McGregor fight.
Yeah. A big payday. Yes. At least for Diaz. But I think if Pettis wins, we don't see no – I don't think Pettis will fight Conor if he wins, but I think if Diaz fight wins, it's obvious.
Yeah, well, but we'll see what happens here. Look forward to watching the fights on Saturday. Of course, want to let you know that this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast is brought to you by Roman. Guys, we are terrible at taking care of our health, whether it's a knee injury, back injury, or something worse. We're just usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. Look, I'm guilty of this myself. I hate going and seeing the doctor. It's like literally, it's the last thing I want to do is go see a doctor, but it is something that we have to do. And the same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online.
With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. And here's the cool thing. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. Go there, complete an online visit. If your doctor decides the treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free two-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. And with Roman, it's easy to connect with the doctor.
Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport for a free visit. To get started, GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And we appreciate their support of this podcast. And now it is time for the interview portion of the show. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with the caveman, David Rickles, who fights next week, Bellator 225. Also, you're going to hear my conversation with Tyrell Fortune, as he'll be a part of that car as well. And then the final interview is going to be with Carmen Carbajal, who's going to be fighting at Valor FC 63. So here's my interviews with David Rickles, Tyrell Fortune, and Carmen Carbajal. Join me now here on the MMA Report. I'm asking to be a part of Bellator 225 coming up on August the 24th. It is the caveman, David Rickles. David, how's it going, man?
What's up? I'm good.
It's good over here as well. I was going on your Instagram account. I thought one of the things that stuck out to me where you had this post about, you know, preparing for this fight, and you said, can't say I'm getting stronger or faster than I've ever been, but definitely smarter. So how would you describe to the casual MMA fan of how you're becoming a smarter fighter?
Yeah, I guess the big thing, you know, is as we get older, we get more experienced, we start to sift out behaviors in training camp, ways of thinking, that sort of thing, that, you know, sift out what's favorable, right? What produces wins. And I think that over time, you know, I've got 21 fights or 22 fights. I can't remember exactly for Bellator, but shoot, you know, 20 before that even also. So I've been fighting for a long time, and just sifting through this, getting a little bit older, a little more knowledgeable, a little more wisdom about the fight game. I feel like I've just found a good, happy medium for, you know, killing myself in training as well as learning you know, that's one of the really important things, right? Continue the learning process. I think that once you stop learning in this game, you should probably just be done.
Obviously, we get to see the enjoyment you have in the fight game. We see the enjoyment you have, you know, in the preparations for your walkout to the Bellator cage. We've seen some of those great ones that you've had. And they always talk about why a fighter loves the fight game. For you, what gets you up every morning, get you into the gym, not just to help prepare yourself for fights, but to help the rest of your team with the fights as well?
Physically, it's just a challenge, man. Like, I've always really enjoyed anything that makes you want to quit, but you have to find some type of mental capacity to keep going. I like to do things that scare the shit out of me. So, fighting is definitely one of the things, man, where you're terrified right before you do it. But when you start walking out to the cage, man, like, that's when you turn on. That's when you get to see what you're really made of. Those lights kind of define you in those moments. Win or lose, this is just a game that I've loved since day one. So just passionate still. That's the main thing.
And obviously you put together, you know, back-to-back wins here, and now you got Yaroslav Amosov, undefeated fighter. What sticks out to you about him to where you say, man, this guy, there's a reason he's 21-0?
I would just say, like, if I'm going to say what really stands out, it's probably just his fight IQ as well as his grappling, which kind of, you know, his fight IQ plays into his grappling really well. He's really composed out there. So he tries to make you fight his fight as well. I think anytime a fighter can, you know, switch gears on you and make you fight their fight, that's a dangerous thing to have. You know what I mean? And he's had a couple of fights against like top level guys now, like Gerald Harris and Eric Silva, and I think, you know, I definitely see some things that I could capitalize on, and I mean, that's the goal, right? Like, I hope to go in there and be able to do that.
What do you think your key to victory is?
I think there's a couple keys. One of the biggest ones was keeping my gas tank, which I've always had a really good gas tank. I think there's some natural things that I really do well that kind of make this fight interesting for him. But I need to make it a little bit of a dog fight, but I have to wrestle hard all the time. I have to keep things moving and create scrambles. He likes to slow the fight down with his grappling. And I need to use scrambles and striking to speed it up.
What's the difference in your gas tank fighting at 170 as opposed to 55?
You know what's funny about that? Not much. You know what has changed a lot, though? My ability to absorb damage. I have a lot more water flowing around in my skull now. I feel a little more composed and sharper when I'm in there. A lot less stress going into the bouts. So, I just get to fine-tune all the way till I walk into the cage. And I think that's really important for fighters. I think especially for the longevity of fighters.
Is there at all a part of you wishes that you would have been at 170, you know, for all this time and not been down at 55 because of, you know, the not having to cut the weight and what you feel like on fight night?
Shoulda, woulda, coulda, man. My coach used to say all the time, like, oh, we'd be on top if we'd have just stayed at 70, blah, 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 this and that. But I had good fights at 55. I had good fights. I had bad fights. I'm not one for just, you know, dwelling in the past. I mean, you can't change shit on that, right? So, I don't know. I'm just going forward. I've had 3 fights now, I think, in a row at 170, and I feel like my body has finally adjusted well. You know, I'm sitting at 185 pounds, and I have abs. So, you know, my body has definitely changed for the better. I'm eating healthy. I can eat a full meal, but it's healthy, right? And I still, you know, I have good muscle-to-fat ratio or whatever. I feel like an actual athlete now.
You mentioned about how, you know, I'm looking at what's ahead of me. I'm not looking at what's behind me. Are you the type of fighter? Do you like to go back and watch your previous fights to maybe self-analyze yourself? Or is it just, man, that's in the past. I'm just looking ahead.
Well, I'll watch a little bit to see what I did right, or what I maybe did wrong in some areas, right? And then I'll just try to adjust my training to fit those gaps, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I wasn't moving my head enough. Okay, I need to work on my head movement a little bit more. Or, oh, my, look how wide my feet were. I need to adjust my stance, you know what I mean? Get a little bit tighter on that. Just those sort of things, basically, or combos that really worked for me, or, you know, just little details, I guess.
Are you strictly still training in Wichita, or are you going to other gyms to you know, cross train now?
I do. I'll go to spar other places. Like, I'll go to Oklahoma, and there's a gym out there where everybody gets together. We had like 20 pros last couple weekends, sparring and stuff like that. And then I go out to Manhattan, Kansas, which has one of my old coaches, Joe Wilk. He's got a few really high caliber. He has a lot of really strong grapplers there, so I've been going out there a little bit to get that kind of work in. But still, I'm still here in Wichita doing most of my technique training and stuff with my original coach.
And of course, we're all gonna be able to see this fight come up here on August 24th, Bellator 225, of course, live on the Paramount Network, also streaming on DAZN. David, man, as always, I appreciate time and look forward to seeing the fight next week, man.
Thanks.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man steps back inside the Bellator cage. Come here, Bellator 225. It is Tyrell Fortune. Looks to go to 7-0 in his career. Tyrell, appreciate the time. You know, I was going through your Instagram feed, and I saw that, you know, doing some work with Ryan Bader. What is the biggest thing you take away from working in the room with him?
Man, just being able to pick his brain and his experience is a blessing. You know, being able to work out with him three times a week, so being able to spar and have those rounds with him makes a big difference. And it is it's a big confidence boost, knowing that I'm you know, fighting with the champion, and I'm trying to, you know, be the champion one day. You know, shows me like how fast I can, it shows me just in the level of experience I can advance, and just being able to have that experience around is very helpful. You know,
confidence is obviously something every athlete has, and particularly in this sport. You walk that cage, you got to feel like you're the baddest dude on the planet. Was that something for you in terms of mixed martial arts? Was that day one the confidence was there, or was there a certain point in your career where you felt like, hey, I'm a confident fighter?
I would say when I started knocking out sparring partners that were professional boxers, when that had already was like, yeah, I'm not going to move around. That was already like 12-0 at boxing, and I'm knocking them out. That's really what brought the confidence as far. I knew, like, you know, coming into MMA, you had to develop. I had to develop more skills. Just being a wrestler isn't going to cut it. So, you know, once I got my hands developed and I feel confidence in my hands, it makes a big difference in this sport.
Obviously, when you came to this sport, you know, everyone immediately was drawn to you, you know, obviously with your amateur background. But how do you think the MMA community views you? Do you think they still view you as a wrestler, or do you think they now view you as, this guy's a complete fighter?
You know, I wouldn't even say I'm a complete fighter yet. I would say I'm still growing. You know, I still try to learn everything I can. But I think, yeah, definitely as I continue fighting, that I am leaving that just that title of just being a wrestler. Because if you can see in all my fights, I'm not just trying to, I don't go for just takedown. I'm not trying to lay on somebody. I'm looking to knock people out and use more than just my hands. So I think as I continue fighting and showing my progression, that I won't have that title on my head anymore.
When we spoke to you backstage after you win back in February, you mentioned I'm looking for a step up in competition. Was this a step up in competition you were looking for in Rudy, or did you have, or were you hoping that it maybe would be someone with a more known name?
I was expecting somebody of more name. Actually, I was looking for to fight somebody that had a lot more fights than me. But Rudy asked to fight me, and I don't turn down any fight. So he asked to fight me, so I said yes.
When you hear that a fighter says that he wants to fight you, is that a compliment? Or is it kind of like, man, this guy thinks he can beat me?
Oh, it's personal right off the – it's personal right from the start. And not only that, I know Rudy. We wrestled together and we wrestled each other and we wrestled together in college. We wrestled each other in college, but we've known each other since high school. So I decided it was funny that he asked to fight me already. I felt like we could have waited. We could have waited to have this fight and maybe build a story off of it, especially being from the same city.
I was going to ask that because seeing that, you know, he being from Portland, anything you remember about when the two of you wrestled each other?
Well, I beat him when we wrestled in college. We wrestled plenty of times in the practice room. I've always beat him. So I think for him, this fight is very personal, if you ask me. I think when he got fine belts or he was looking forward to fighting me from the start. So it didn't surprise me when they told me that he wanted to fight me. I just thought it would be a little later.
What do you think of his mixed martial arts abilities?
I don't think he has very many skills at all. I think he's a brawler. He doesn't have very much conditioning. He's knocked out a guy out in the first round, and all they did was stand in front of each other and bang. If you watch him try to move, he can't even move his feet and punch at the same time. I just think it's funny, you know, a guy like that with that many skills, and he's wrestled. He knows I'm a better wrestler than he is. So I don't know where he thought, you know, he sees the win. I think he's looking for a big knockout. He thinks I'm going to stand right in front of him. I think that's the only shot he has.
As I mentioned at the beginning, a win puts you to 7-0. And you mentioned about, hey, you were hoping for a little bit of a bigger name. Are you planning to call out a particular name after this, maybe hoping that you can get the name that you ultimately want?
I don't know. I think I'm asking wishing for too much if I'm trying to do that. That's not really how this game works. You know, I wish it did. I wish you could call somebody out and they have to accept the fight, but it doesn't. So, you know, right now I think that this card has 3 or 4 other heavyweight fights. And just watching how those stuff playing out because of the Russians that's fighting Timothy Johnson, I was actually looking forward to either one of those guys. So after watching that fight, probably trying to fight one of those guys next. And or just see who else plays up because Bellator also find three other heavyweights. So, you know, just see where I'm at and talk to Bellator and see what they think and then get in the cage. But I also want to just make sure I'm challenging myself. And I'm going up a competition, fighting anybody that less fights than me at this point now doesn't make sense.
And, of course, we're all going to be able to see your fight come up here on August the 24th. Bellator 225 live on the Paramount Network. Also streams on DAZN. Tyrell, as always, I appreciate your time and look forward to seeing the fight.
Thank you.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a fire screen, a part of Valor FC 63 coming up on beginning of September the 6th, Carmen Carbajal, as she has her second professional fight. Carmen, I appreciate the time. Getting a chance to kind of learn about you over the past couple of days and understanding kind of this martial arts journey kind of starts with wrestling in college.
Yep, I started wrestling in college and fell in love with it, stayed doing combat sports. It's what I love to do it.
Is it one of those things when your college days were over, was it a natural transition of, hey, let me get involved in martial arts, or did it kind of take a little time?
Well, I had a baby right out of college, so it took me some time to get into MMA, but I already had it in my forethoughts that I wanted to do it, so.
Amateur debut back in 2016. Is there anything about that first amateur fight that that you remember to this day?
I just remember feeling like super peaceful and really pumped. I was super like hyper for some, like just excited and just focused, really. That's all I could remember.
Do you get nervous before fights?
Every fight, yeah.
Does it ever go away?
No, because I think if I have that feeling, then I know it's normal. Like that's my ready feeling. Like, okay, I feel the nerves. This is good. I'm ready to go out there. Like, this is just part of it. So I don't know. Just it's a good thing for me. I don't know why, but it is. So I just know that if that's not there, then something's wrong. Like, so I don't know.
And I've heard other fighters say that. They'll say, like, you feel like you got to kind of have some nerves, but then more times than not, fighters will say, you know, once all, you know, the announcements are made, announcer walks out of the cage, cage door shuts, it's you, your opponent, the referee, it kind of goes away at that point. Is it like that for you, or does it kind of maybe take, you know, throwing the first punch, first kick, or vice versa for you to kind of be like, okay, let's go?
I guess it's different every time, but it does go away at some point, and you just kind of zoned in and you're just focused on what you want to do, on your techniques. So, yeah.
And now the second professional fight here, unfortunately, the first one doesn't go your way back in January.
Yeah.
Obviously you hate to learn those lessons in defeat. You would hope those lessons would come in victories.
Yeah.
But how would you say you've evolved as a martial artist, you know, since that fight in January?
I would say I don't think evolving happens one day to the next and stuff. So I think little by little, I'm understanding. Like, I have to just take what I can and move forward. But I'm thinking I need to slow down. I'm super, like, right in your face. And I need to back up a little bit more and just kind of slowly get there. I really want to just tackle people and punch them, like, right off the bat. And that's just that I'm just aggressive in that way, and I need to kind of tone it back and just kind of work myself in there with the techniques that I've learned. So that's what I'm going to try to do this time.
I've heard fighters talk about that. They'll say, you know, hey, I'm in the gym, me, my coaches, you know, my teammates, we're kind of working on me not being as aggressive as I like to be. And they'll say, you know, hey, it's working in the training room. But then sometimes they'll say fight night gets here, and your opponent lands that punch, and it's like everything you've been working on the last 3 months just went right out the window. Is there a concern of that?
Well, I mean, you're always going to get punched. There's no way that you're not going to get punched. So you kind of expect it, and sometimes it just doesn't happen the way you want it. But I mean, that's part of the game, you know, it's part of the fun.
What would you say is the biggest learning lesson you've taken in this game, you know, since your amateur debut?
The biggest lesson is, I mean, it's, I think it hasn't changed. Like, you get what you earn, and that's just, I don't know, that's how it is. You just get what you earn, and I earned that loss. I should have just, you got to grow. You got to lose sometimes. So that's just how I see it. I don't see it as anything positive or negative. It's just what it is.
And you got Rebecca coming up here at Valor 63. What do you see as your key to victory in this matchup?
To be honest, just to be patient with my punches and my takedowns. That's really all. Just be patient, because I have what it takes. I have confidence in my skills. So, I don't know.
It's a pro debut for your opponent. Look at our Tapology, has her 2-0 as an amateur in mixed martial arts. Do you even concern yourself with the opponent, or is that something where, like, okay, I'll let my coaches worry about that. Let them give me whatever information, but ultimately I have to worry about myself. I can't be so enamored with what they do. I just got to be me.
Yeah, that's really how I work. I haven't looked her up. I didn't even know. I don't remember her name. My friends tell me about her, but not. I'm just like, okay, awesome. But I don't worry about it.
Is that just always been your mentality in terms of competition from, you know, your wrestling days to now? It's like, I just got to worry about myself.
Yeah. Especially in college. I didn't look up girls. I didn't look up who I was fighting. And even if it was a big name, I wouldn't know. I would just go out there and try to do what I got to do.
In terms of, you mentioned, you know, being a mother, also being a fighter, and how do you balance that life? I mean, I don't have any children, so I have no idea. I have young nieces, but how do you balance that schedule?
Well, right now my husband takes a lot of the load off, because he's the, you know, the bread maker, and I get to stay home with her most of the day, and then he comes home and then we both go off to train, because he trains also. But we switch on and off on who takes care of her. So it's a big team thing. It's not just myself. Yeah. So he's a lot of help.
How old's your daughter?
She's 5 years old.
Do you, does she understand what mom does?
Yeah, she understands, and she does judo right now and jujitsu. So she likes it, and she's just part of her life because that's what we do every day. So now, she's used to it.
You know, let's say she starts to get 14, 15, 16. She comes to mom and dad and says, I want to be a fighter. Would you try to stop her from doing that? Or would you just be full support? Hey, if that's what you want to do, you know, we'll give you all the tools you need.
Yeah, I would let her fight if she wants to fight. I mean, we enjoy it. We love it. It's part of a different way of growing in life. Yeah, other people have, you know, education and scholars and stuff, and other people have sports, and just everything's just different avenues, but the same way of growing, learning different ways. I think it's beautiful.
What do you enjoy most about martial arts?
I think I just, it kind of gets me out of my comfort zone, and it pushes me to not only physically, but spiritually and mentally. And I think that's why I like it, because it just pushes me to be a better person. It pushes me to be just better than what I am at the moment. And it's a never ending journey, and I like it.
One of the things that Shamir was telling me that you like to do is bake cakes. So like, what would be if you were going to enter like a baking competition, is there like a go-to cake you would go to make?
No, there really isn't. I like to bake all of them. I don't know. It's just something I do on the side. It's nothing like super huge on my list. I just do it.
Are you a big cooker at home, or is that something you do a lot?
Well, I have to. I have no choice. I got a family. I got to just do it. No matter if I don't want to. But no, I really am not like a super fan of cooking and baking. I like the artistic part of like baking, like decorating. I am very artistic. So because I could put details in the cake with frosting in different ways, with different desserts and cookies and stuff, and make something totally that doesn't look like a cake, but it's a cake. I like to do that.
But I got to imagine, as we're just a couple weeks from this fight, you probably can't partake in those goodies too much.
No, I don't. I actually don't even like cake that much. I just like decorating them. I bake them and decorate them for people to make them look very awesome.
That's awesome. But I mentioned the fight coming up here, Valor FC 63, September 6th, of course, live on Flow Combat. Carmen, I appreciate time. Let everyone know they can follow you out on social media. Any sponsor you want to shout out, the floor is yours.
I just want to say thank you to my team, KMAA. Thank you for Taylor Made Fitness. She's awesome. She's my strength and conditioning coach. That's pretty much it. They're my core people, and I love them, and I love my family. Thank you, guys. You guys have a good one.
And there was my conversations with David Rickles, Tyrell Fortune, and Carmen Carbajal. I appreciate all those fighters coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, Bellator 225 coming up on August the 24th there in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I am scheduled to talk to Ricky Mendejas later on today. That'll be on next week's edition of the podcast. Also, working on getting Nick Newell on the podcast next week as he makes his Bellator debut. Also, speaking of some of my interviews, be sure to go over to the MMAReport.com to check out all the interviews that I do have up there. Currently, you can watch my interview with performance coach Dylan Nadler as he works with MMA fighters. So be sure to check that out. Also, Anthony Romero, of course, talk to him about what's going on with him and his King of the Cage fight. Also, some interviews coming up later on this week. Peter Barrett, who's going to be a part of next week's Contender Series, going to have a conversation with him. I have a conversation with Chris Gutierrez, who's coming off that win at UFC Uruguay. Also, a couple other interviews. Be on the lookout for those on themmareport.com. Be sure to subscribe to the MMA Report on YouTube, as definitely trying to get all those subscriber bases up. But Dale, last weekend it was UFC Uruguay, and you know, we like to be real here, Daniel, and I'm just going to be real. After the third round of Shevchenko and Carmouche, I was watching live. I turned it off and went to bed.
Are you telling me Shevchenko Carmouche wasn't a good fight, Jason?
No, it was not. Like I'm sitting there, like I'm, and look, I was already tired. I got back that day from Pittsburgh. I was already kind of, you know, tired from, you know, working the game the previous night. And after the first 15 minutes, I said, I'm just going to go to bed because clearly this fight, what I've seen the first 15 minutes, it's just going to be rinse and repeat in the last 10 minutes because you just knew Liz Carmouche was not going to go for broke.
Yeah, and there was nothing Carmouche could do that could sway Valentina Shevchenko. Shevchenko was just absolutely the better fighter, outclassed her on the feet, and out-wrestled her. And that was an issue for Carmouche, where you thought maybe she could utilize her takedown arsenal to maybe steal a round or two. Just not the case. This fight sucked. A lot of inactivity. And it's just not a fight that does Shevchenko any favors in terms of star power. No one watched that fight card and thought, damn, can't wait to watch Shevchenko fight again. They thought, damn, Mike Perry's nose is messed up. That fight was awesome. Oh, the main event? That was boring. It's just impossible to sit down and watch the main event and be, like, entertained.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. You think about it, just a couple months ago, she, you know, head kicks Jessica Ai and comes back and has that fight. And, you know, it leads to what's next. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, you do look at that Nunes trilogy matchup. You know, Caitlin had mentioned about she won it, but she's now got a fight book for the card at MSG in November against Jennifer Maia. It's almost like you kind of feel like the UFC maybe kind of let's let some things kind of play out at 125 pounds before figuring out what we want to do next with her.
Yes, I think so. There isn't a clear contender, and I think it's a situation where we can absolutely be a bit patient with seeing if someone will step up. I mean, there's plenty of fighters lower down the totem pole you can maybe eventually project there, but there just isn't a clear-cut contender that makes sense for Shevchenko.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned about you know, Mike Perry, man. That has to be one of the worst broken noses I've ever seen. I really enjoyed that fight between him and Vicente Luque. I thought that was really an opportunity for Vicente Luque to really kind of take this big step in his career. Because, I mean, look, one of the things you know about Mike Perry is he's going to bring the fight to you. And I just feel like Luque did ultimately maximize on that, you know, because he's a guy that he's not going to sit there and talk trash. He just goes out there and wins. But I did think we saw the evolution of Mike Perry, where he is much more than a brawler now. I thought he looked very good, man. And you know, the fact that he didn't tap in that third round to that guillotine choke as blood is just pouring out of his head is pretty amazing there. But for Vicente Luque, it's just like he's just one of these guys who's at that lower, you know, top 15, 170 pounds. It's like, man, you got to do something spectacular to get people excited about you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be tough for him to be dominant against these top 15 guys because they're all killers. This welterweight division is tough and difficult to climb. And Vicente looked pretty awesome in this fight. This is a fight where he got tagged a lot. I mean, it was an unbelievable fight. I absolutely love this one, and if you haven't seen it, check it out. It was a bloody war. For Luque, I don't necessarily know if he has a talent level to go out there against a lot of these guys and run through them. There's a few of them above him that maybe you could think, man, maybe if he goes in there with Damian Maia, he'll be a rough time for Maia, really run through him. But other than that, there aren't a lot of guys. Luque's really talented. I think it's going to be a slow but steady approach for him as he attempts to climb up the welterweight rankings. But this is a fight where if you watched it, you want to watch more of him for sure if you're a consumer of the product because you just were wowed by the violence of this fight.
I think when you look at the rest of this card, I think there's two fighters that really stick out to you about what they were able to do on fight night. Volkan Ozdemir looked amazing against Lyra Latifi. I think you could sit there and say that's the best version we have seen of Volkan Ozdemir inside the UFC. And then you got to look at Ciryl Gane, who got that submission in the first round at, you know, only his fourth professional fight, now 4-0. I mean, that's a guy that, you know, to me going forward, he's someone that you say, okay, whenever he's fighting next, okay, I want to make sure I watch to see that development of him. And is this a guy that, you know, maybe a year, 2 years from now, you know, could be, you know, a top of, you know, nearing that, you know, top 5-10-ish area.
Yeah, man. In that division, things are open, and Gane could absolutely be a guy like that. He looked awesome in his performance. Ozdemir, man, he was fighting like his head was on fire. Like, he had lost three in a row. He was ready to get a win, and he put away Latifi. Those two performers looked good. Just a couple other people I would highlight. We had a pair of decision wins that I think were notable. Gilbert Burns easily beat Alexei Kunchenko. He won the first two rounds with wrestling and grappling. Tisha Torres suffered yet another loss to Marina Rodriguez, and Marina Rodriguez in the women's strawweight division looks like a really, really talented striker. And then the fighter that really stuck out to me, other than the two you mentioned, would be the woman flyweight Veronica Machado, who just went out there and got the fastest submission in women flyweight history with a 69-second arm bar over Pollyanna Viana. Veronica looks like a killer, and she's someone who I'd keep an eye on.
I feel like the UFC days of Tisha Torres are over.
Me too. I think you lose.
Look, her previous three losses are against the absolute top of the division. But the fact is, you go down her record, and she's gone to the distance in 14 of her 15 fights. You know, so that's why I feel like, you know, to me, I feel like maybe the UFC is going to say, go to Invicta, you know, pick up some wins, and then maybe you can come back. But you know, you keep going to decision the way she does, that's just not the type of fire the UFC wants.
Yeah, I definitely concur with you. I think this may be her last fight for a while. I think a loss like this sends her out of the UFC.
We should also note Contender Series happened last night. Four contracts were given out. One of those contracts was a development deal. That is for William Knight, who got a TKO win in the third round. Brock Weaver, Sarah Alpar, and Tony Gravely all walked away with UFC contracts. Tony Gravely looked amazing. Brock Weaver looked great as well. And Brock, along with, you know, being able to show his performance, also had a great interview there with Laura Senko, which probably, you know, he was probably getting in a contract that night regardless, but you could see Dana White did love the way he was talking. If people did not watch it, Gravely Rodriguez was a great fight. You know, I think probably the best fight this season. And, you know, one of the things about the Contender Series this year, there's a lot of times you're watching these fights where you just feel like the talent this year is just not what we have seen in previous seasons of the Contender Series. But Gravely and Rodriguez are both there, and I think Ray Rodriguez will be a guy that will gets a win on the regional scene somewhere, and I think the UFC is going to bring him in.
Definitely. He's a name who's been on the regional scene for a very long time. Years on end, he's been a part of a fixture. And I think absolutely, we've seen fighters lose in the Contender Series and eventually make their way back. And to put on a tremendous showcase like that in a great contest, they're going to get a call back.
The other fight, Julius Angelikis gets a third round submission against Carl Reed. Carl Reed pretty much gassed out in this fight. And this was now the second time that Carl Reed has been on the Contender Series and, now losing both times. His Contender Series matchups here is just, a guy that, from Upstate Karate there, Stephen Thompson's and Ray Thompson's gym. And, now having two losses in the Contender Series, maybe that road to the UFC is a little tough. He had won four in a row, but, the four previous fights was against guys that, just were not having much success of recent. So we'll see what happens there. For Julius Angelikis, I think he's a guy that, he's an LFA champion. I think he'll get in our fight in LFA and then probably ends up back in the UFC. Of course, Contender Series, we'll be back next Tuesday. As I mentioned, I'll have a conversation with Peter Barrett on themareport.com later on this week to preview his matchup. But as we wrap up this week's edition of the show, I do want to talk about some news and notes. Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Michelle Waterson, which was slated to take place in San Francisco, is no longer happening in San Francisco. It's now going to headline UFC on ESPN Plus 19 here in my hometown of Tampa, Florida, on October 12th, but Daniel, I won't be there because, well, I'll be across the pond in London, as that's the weekend the Bucks are playing the Panthers in London.
Wow. I'm sure you will be watching that card live in London, Jason.
Oh, probably. No way. No yeah. way. Five-hour time difference, so that'd be like, even if it's like an 8 p.m. main card start, that's 1 a.m. London time. No.
Dedication. You need to have it, Jason.
Okay. That'll be popping on the DVR when I get back to the States.
Yeah, well, I am looking forward to that fight. I think that's
I don't like that fight for Michelle Waterson at all.
I do think Joanna is going to be the heavy favorite.
Oh, I just that's just a fight that for Michelle Waterson. I mean, look, yes, Michelle Waterson wins that fight. Clearly, she's going to get a title fight at 115 pounds. But man, I don't like that matchup for her at all. But you know, I don't leave for London that week till Thursday. So maybe we'll try to get some interviews on the podcast of fighters on the card that week. And then I saw. This is another interesting thing. So I guess apparently Bare Knuckle is coming to Tampa either late September. So like 2 or 3 weeks before that UFC car, which I'm like, why? Why are you going to do that?
I have no idea.
Because if you're that fight fan that lives in Tampa and you can only afford to go to one or the other, pretty clear which one you're going to go to.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they just weren't even aware.
By the way, did you see the viral knockout from Bare Knuckle last weekend?
No, what was it?
So guy, one punch knockout, guy falls flat on his face. So the referee, as the fighter is falling flat on his face, is running in to, you know, obviously, you know, stop the fight. And he's like waving for the cage side doctor to come in. And like cage side doctor's not coming. And then like finally doc comes in. He's just like strolling in like nothing's going on as the fighter is knocked out face first.
Jesus.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That is bad look. That's a bad look.
Yeah, bad look on the Mississippi Commission. Another matchup that UFC has announced, Alistair Overeem, Walt Harris is going to headline UFC on ESPN 7 in Washington, D.C. on December the 7th. So a big opportunity there for Walt Harris. John Allen, who did get that win over Mike Rodriguez back at that Fight Night card in Sacramento, he actually tested positive for a banned substance. So, you know, he's obviously going to be facing some type of suspension from the California State Athletic Commission. And Daniel, you know, we always like to say, never believe when a fighter talks retirement, right?
Yeah, never believe it.
Stefan Struve, who mentioned about possible retirement after his last fight in his post-fight interview. Nope, he is back. He's coming back. Apparently, he's got the love again. So he's going to fight Ben Rothwell, UFC on ESPN 7. And then the other news item I want to mention before we get out of here. Paige VanZant was doing an interview with James Lynch from The Score, and she mentioned that she has one fight left on her UFC deal, and she wants to fight out the deal and wants to prove her worth, which makes me kind of wonder, what is that?
Look, she's not a premier fighter currently. She could be one day, but she is valuable. Because
I don't think she's...
I think if you're Bellator, you can market her. If you're a rival promotion, you can market her.
I feel like she can make more money outside of fighting than actually fighting.
For sure. I could see that. But she's definitely marketable. I mean, like if you're a promotion and you have a weak talent roster and you go out and you put her out there and she wins and wins and wins, you can build her into a star.
I mean, look, her best win, no doubt about it, is Felice Herrick.
Mm-hmm.
But then if I say, what's her next best win? What do you say? Rachel Ostovich, Rawlings.
Yeah, she's not a top.
I mean, that's the thing, I'm sure she's going to get big money. I mean, and she is very promotable. We all know why she's very promotable. There's no reason to sugarcoat it, because she's an attractive woman. But I'm sitting there from a fighting aspect. I don't know if people are going to open up the bank for her.
I don't really. The bank's not going to get open real big.
And I think their problem is she's got to kind of remain healthy.
Yeah, that has been a big issue for her. That has been.
Think about this. She fought December 17th, 2016. That was that submission loss against Michelle Waterson. She's fought twice since.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
She didn't fight all of 2017. Only fought once in 2018, which was in January of 2018. She fought back in January of this year. She's got that arm injury. She's coming back from it. And I sit there. Look, I'm sure Bellator would open up the pocketbooks. I'm sure they would. But, you know, it's the question is, and what becomes a point if you're Bellator, you're like, man, how do we make money on this deal?
I think you can, because she's a lot more marketable than Julia Budd, for instance. And you can build a division around Paige VanZant. Scott Coker is the master of building a big fish in a small pond, and that could be done with PVZ.
I mean, look, if you're Lima Leigh McFarlane, you're praying for them to sign Paige VanZant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's a fight, buddy. That's a fight. I would want to see that one, and I think it would draw well.
Yeah, I mean, that if you're Alima, that's what you're hoping for. I mean, obviously, if you're Julia Budd, you're hoping that Bellator signs Chris Cyborg.
And they could do both. It's possible.
Oh, I would be surprised if Chris Cyborg's next fight's not in Bellator.
Same here.
As much as she has misplayed her hand in all of this, to me, it screams her next fight's in Bellator. But and this is, no matter where Chris Cyborg fights, and I talked about this last week, there's a fight that you say, okay, whether it's a UFC or Bellator, that's the next fight I want to see. But what's fight number two?
I can't come up with one.
Outside of Julia Budd and Bellator, tell me what interests you.
Eventually Kayla Harrison. That's it.
Look, if you're Kayla Harrison, the only reason you leave the PFL is to go to the UFC. Why? Okay. Or the PFL folds. But yeah, as long as the PFL is around, if you're Kayla Harrison, why do you leave?
You're right.
Just we'll see if she can get through Sarah Coffin, you know, if that fight ultimately happens in the finals. But, like, I look at PFL and I'm like, if you're a free agent, why are you not signing with PFL?
Yeah, if you're confident in your ability to win a tournament.
Dude, if you're a mid-level UFC fighter, you know, you're like borderline top 15, maybe you're getting close to top 10, why would you not sign with PFL?
Yeah, the financial incentive is there if you win that tournament. That's beautiful money.
The only thing I can think of, and why I ultimately think Chris Cyborg ends up in Bellator, is Bellator will give her more money per fight than PFL would.
Yeah, the guarantee.
I think PFL's whole thing is this million-dollar prize at the end of the day. Well, when you're trying to get a fighter like Chris Cyborg, she's not going to come in and fight for, you know, she's going to probably want, you know, $500,000 to fight.
And probably two fights a year.
Well, I mean, if you did PFL, you're going to get what, three or four if you're in the females, depending on how many fighters are in that division. But still, I mean, but it just makes all the sense in the world if you're Bellator to bring her in. It just makes all the sense. I mean, I was talking about this last week on the show, is with Chris, when the UFC lets a fighter walk, when have they been wrong?
I think the only fighter they're wrong with is Demetrius Johnson.
Ryan Bader?
Oh, Bader, too. That's a good one, too.
Like, to me, the names, I mean, DJ is one you bring up, but the other names I came up with, and it's happened to be all three fighters that are currently in Bellator, Ryan Bader, Gegard Mousasi, Rory McDonald.
Kyoji Horiguchi.
Damn, that's a good one. I did not think of Koji. Yeah. Yeah. That's probably the one that would be the one I'd probably point to. Koji. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, but like, they've let go a lot of guys. So it's like we did come
you're,
up with.
You're talking like less than 2% of the fighters they let go that they were, you know, but more times than not, when they let a fighter walk, they're right.
Yeah. Oh, and then also like the 14 flyweights they let go. Do you see that?
Flyweight division's still around, Daniel. What are you talking about?
Huh?
The flyweight division is still around. I don't know what you're talking about.
I know, but now they got like eight flyweights. Like, they did an interview with, I saw an interview that went viral with one of the flyweights that won a couple weeks ago.
Matt Schnell?
They asked him what three flyweights they want back, and it was just like three former UFC guys.
Was, like, dude, Schnell is looking amazing. He had a great win against Smolka. And then, God, who did he beat 2 weeks ago? I can't think of who he beat off the top of my head. And he called out Davison Figueiredo.
Yeah.
That's a fight he wants. But the UFC, they want Cejudo to defend the 25-pound belt next. Even though he called out Valentina Shevchenko.
Yeah, that was weird. And then we had her, like, point a gun. That was a whole mess. That was a whole.
The UFC would never even entertain that.
No. That's a bad idea.
Like, is it wrong of me going, did Cejudo do that just to keep himself in the news cycle?
Probably. I mean, he's kind of like a little bit of a Colby Covington himself.
It's different. But, you know, here's the difference between Cejudo and Covington. When you talk about Henry Cejudo, more times than not, we talk about what he did inside the octagon. How often do you talk about what Colby Covington did in the octagon?
Never.
Like, he had a great performance, an unbelievable performance against Robbie Lawler. No one's talking about it because of what he said about Matt Hughes, then that appearance on ESPN Plus, and then his, what, you know, his appearance on Sirius XM. No one talks about what he actually, it's, and he's putting together unbelievable performances in the Octagon.
Yep, that is the clear difference. That is the clear difference.
Yeah, like we can talk about Connor's antics, but then we also ultimately talk about what he did inside the cage.
Yes, yes.
It's just Covington,
it's a distraction. It's a distraction from what he does inside the cage.
Yeah, but of course, we're both looking forward to seeing UFC 241 come up on this Saturday. Of course, be sure to check out our sponsor, Roman, and use our code MMAReport. All you got to do is go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport for a free online visit and free two-day shipping, and I appreciate their support of this podcast. Of course, be sure to give me a follow on Twitter and Instagram at Jason_Floyd. Of course, be sure to give Daniel a follow on Twitter at Daniel Galvan DGG. And that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a crush performance with Jeff Krischel Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Dan Pink mentioned a couple things there in terms of motivation and what motivates people, and we've got it wrong. What we know about motivation and encouraging people and getting them motivated to, you know, do things that are, might be a little bit uncomfortable, isn't what we thought. And sporting organizations, businesses, even schools are getting it wrong. We think that money might be a motivator. Well, it's not. Studies have proven time and time again that more money does not equal better performance. What does? Input, autonomy, control of your future. There's people who will take less pay if they have more control over their day-to-day activities. And one of the things that I have found in our programs is that once you get the athlete involved in the developmental conversation, in their personal developmental conversation, and even in the team approach, oh man, you've got buy-in at every single level. It might be as simple as, you know, 13-year-old soccer players. Hey, guys, we've got 5 practices this week and 2 games or whatever it might be. What should we work on as a team? But getting them involved is critical. And we see that in basically every skill set. In every area there's humans trying to get better, we see that phenomenon where athletes, our employees, our students are more engaged if they have more control. And so that's where we kind of have to reset and rethink about, you know, what's motivating and what we're trying to accomplish on our day-to-day programming.
Crush Performance with Jeff Krischel can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.